All right, welcome to the Erie Music History Podcast. I am Chip Shell, your host. And today, my guest is Dale Meyer. Dale, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Dale's a local drummer who has played in a lot of country bands over the years, and I'm sure some other bands. You and I got to play a few times. Play some Beatles together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're going to cover as much as we can about Dale as a musician. I've got a few bullet points that I always find to uncover. First of all, Dale is retired from Wabtec, right?
Yes.
Yeah, used to be called GE.
General Electric.
Right. Plays cajon with one of my favorite duos, the Acoustic Jukebox, with Trevor and Dave, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and you guys play, you're part of the band.
Sometimes I am when they really need a drummer.
Yeah.
But it was about 3 years ago, and I seen that they were playing down at the Oasis. So I went ahead and messaged on their post. They says, do you mind if an old ball-headed guy comes down and brings his cajon?
Yeah.
And they said, yes. So I came down, I played the last set, and I walked out with two paying jobs.
Did you ever know them before that?
Never met them or anything.
That's
nothing.
Awesome.
I know. Yeah, and we hit it off just right.
Yeah, if you don't know what a cajon is, it's a box that a drummer sits on and beats on with his hands, and that's it, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's
long
simple.
Before I played the drums, I played the box.
Yeah.
Or the car. Or the seats.
Yeah. Or the pans or whatever. Way easier than dragging your drums.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything.
It is.
But it adds a lot. It does. I've seen you plenty of times with them. So it adds a lot.
Thank you.
Way back in the day, you graduated from Academy in 1976. You're my first water polo player to be on this podcast.
How'd you know that?
I know everything.
Oh.
You played water polo. You went to Grover Cleveland before that. I imagine you weren't playing water polo at Grover Cleveland.
No, we didn't. We played in the mud.
In 1975, while you were at Academy, you took a Bachelor of Survival course, and you went to Kroger to study butchery and meat. There's a picture of you in the paper about that. You probably don't even remember that.
I do not.
Yeah, well,
wow.
I'm sure Jane, your wife, would say that you... know how to survive in the kitchen because of that, I'm sure.
Well, my senior year, of course, that was 75, 76.
Yeah.
My senior year, I had band, stage band, training band, orchestra, choir, bachelor survival, and pre-calc.
So bachelor survival was a real...
It was one-third of the year was cooking, one-third of the year was sewing.
So it was like home ec.
And the other third was like family planning and designing and working with different colors and... It was different.
That was a lot of drum-related classes you just listed. Were you taking English? Were you taking math? I mean...
I had all the requirements I needed, so my senior year, I didn't have to take anything.
Oh, got
yeah,
it.
Just, so I just needed one credit in math.
So those were electives that you could just take? And...
Well, and the music teacher, too, Mr. Berger. That was his last year there, 76.
All right.
And he loved me, and I loved him.
Cool. Related to the Berger musicians?
Yes, oh yeah.
Bob and...
Yeah.
And
Bill, I think it was, right?
Or Bob. And there's another one, yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's the same family.
Yeah, okay, all right. Oh, that's interesting. I never knew that. Well, maybe I did, and I just forgot when I had Bob on. So he was the music teacher there. So influential to you? Or had you been playing drums prior to taking lessons?
Yeah,
there?
I was, you know... I mean, of course, that was a lot different than anything else I did because it was orchestra and band type things and stuff. You know, the Thunderbirds was obviously drum corps.
Right, right.
But so I was really big into the Thunderbirds, even in those years in high school.
On my last episode, we just got done talking about Pat Ross, and we mentioned a little bit about the Thunderbirds there because his drum shop promoted a lot of the things that the big Thunderbirds events that you would have, like at the stadium and stuff like
that.
Oh,
yeah, oh, yeah.
I know you've been involved with them since at least 73.
I started with them in 71.
71. And
September of 70, but my first year on the field was 71. I was 12 years old.
Tell people what the Thunderbirds were, because they're not around anymore, right?
They're now kind of, I don't want to say defunct, but it's a drum and bugle corps, which is more or less like a professional-type high school bands.
Yeah.
But bigger. The age is pretty much unlimited in senior drum and bugle corps. Junior corps, you can only be up to 21 years old.
Okay. Junior. Okay.
The junior drum.
Right.
Right. The Erie Thunderbirds was a senior drum and bugle corps.
All right.
And we traveled, you know, up to Canada, all through New York State.
Competitions.
A lot of competitions every week during the summer.
Okay. Yep. But otherwise, performing for what? Parades and things like that? I mean, what else did the drum...
Those were below us. for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I mean, if we did a parade, you know, it was like, boy, here we go. It's just for the money.
Right.
But because the competitions were so intense and high energy and precision, it wasn't. You didn't see that in a parade.
Sure, right. So, yeah, I always looked at the Thunderbirds as sort of being this higher level, like really skilled musicians who stayed and continued to play in it. Till how long could you play in the Thunderbirds?
Well, even at my age.
Yeah, still, right.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I started at 12, and so you know, I'm going to be 66 here in August. And actually, some of my best friends and musicians were snare drummers there.
That's what I was going to say. Did you just play snare?
Started off in cymbals.
Oh, okay.
2 years on cymbals, 3 years on timpani, and then the last 3 years on snare drum.
Okay.
And why I say last 3 years is in 79 I started playing in bands.
Okay, all right.
And it was around 83 that the Thunderbirds kind of took a break for a while.
Oh, okay, all right.
So, you know.
So as a drummer, and I don't know this, going from cymbals moving up to, is it moving up to snare, or is it just a different thing? Like you really, it's not like you aspire to play snare, or do you?
Like, oh, well, you know, I mean, we were young and just starting, and really that was the only instrument that I could really play then.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So that's like an introductory.
It is. Okay. It is.
And how did you, in 71, you're what, 14? 12.
12, yeah. Uh-huh.
How do you 13, even 13. Say, Mom, I want to join the Thunderbirds? Are you, had you been taking drum lessons at home?
There was neighbors where we lived, and one of the neighbors, his dad was a radio announcer in town, Oogie Pringle.
Okay.
All right. And his name was John Pringle. And John was always playing the drums, and I can hear from our house because he was like three doors down on the other side of the street.
Where is this? Where'd you grow up?
On Rilling Avenue.
Rilling
Avenue. 40th and Rilling Avenue.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Just not too far from Liberty Plaza.
Okay, area. Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you. All right.
So, and so John was always playing, and he was the one that mentioned, you know, let's go to one of the practices.
Yeah.
And I did. And it was really weird because I was kind of like out of my element. You know, it's like I'm an amateur just starting off.
And yeah,
like,
yeah, no. Yeah.
But I hung with it.
Yeah.
And
obviously fell in love with it.
I did.
Yeah. Did you then get your own kit or did that take a little while?
I got my own kit when I first started taking lessons at Dick Bowling's World of Music, the old one by 26 and Raspberry.
Gotcha. Okay.
It was a used set of drums kind of put together. I think there was two blue ones and a white one.
I'll take the blue one and the white one. I don't care what kind they are.
And there was one cymbal, and it wasn't a Zildjian. It was their cheaper brand called a Zildjian.
No, really?
Yeah. So the whole thing was like $100.
Sure, yeah.
And so that was my very first set of drums.
And who was your teacher?
I had two of them there. John something or other was...
At Dick's.
At
Bowling's.
At Bowling's, yes. Bert Rakowski. Bert was the drummer for Red, White, and Blueberry.
Yeah.
He was my second drum instructor. But I remember it was only a half-hour lesson, and we'd go in there, and for the first 3 or 4 minutes, Bert would he's banging around, and he's doing all this stuff, and I'm just listening, right? And then all of a sudden, okay, Dale, here we go. Tap. Tap, tap. It's like, wow, I got a ways to go.
Well, Bert couldn't have been much older than you.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. He had to be at least 18 or 19, and I was only 10.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's got to be late 70s now.
He is Stanislaus. Right? He has a different name now, right? Doesn't Bert go by a different name?
I don't know.
All I remember is he was a beast, and people talked about that gong that he had behind his kit, and he was loud. In Red, White, and Blueberry.
Yes.
All right. You mentioned some of your friends. Did you played with Steve Kocek in Thunderbirds. First drummer in the first band I ever played in. Steve and I worked at the Erie Sports Store together. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, Maude Shaman, right?
That's what he goes by.
Yeah.
Right. And now everyone knows.
Yeah. Oh, no. I just let the cat out of the bag. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that on Facebook. I was like, that was my first drummer. Yeah.
And two of his brothers were also in the Thunderbirds.
Oh, okay.
There was Steve, Pat, and Mark.
Oh, okay.
And, And like Jerry Tannenbaum.
I know that name. Yeah.
Mark Tannenbaum's brother.
Oh, okay.
He plays jazz drums in Philly area.
All right.
He was there. Of course, Joe Salarino in the Thunderbirds.
Right. Yeah, all Academy guys,
those
too.
Are still my, go-to people.
Yeah, right.
Contacts. Learned a lot from them.
Yeah, I bet. Wow. So you're in Thunderbirds. You're in school doing all those different band and orchestra. And there was one. Name all those again, because one of them I was confused with.
Band? Training band.
Training band. What is that?
That was like for the first year students, and it was kind of like a practice thing. There was only maybe 10 people, maybe 15 people in the class.
Okay.
So it was like a junior type of a band. They weren't ready for the regular full marching band.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. All right. And was the...
And it was a free period probably for Mr. Berger. So.
People talk about marching band who have done it over the years. You graduate in 76. I graduated in 83, so I'm a little bit younger. But even then, the bands were bigger than they are today.
Yes.
How was Academy back then?
We were pretty darn big. I mean, yeah. McDowell was the big band.
Right.
But Academy was pretty big. I'm going to say 60 to 70.
That's a good size.
People. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And how did they do competition-wise?
They really didn't compete too much.
Oh, no? Okay.
No.
All right.
I don't know why. Maybe Mr. Berger was thinking, hey, I'm getting close to retirement. I don't need this stuff.
Right. Well, you alluded to the fact that in 79 you started playing in bands. So you didn't have any of those crazy named bands that people are on here always talking about. We played at the Y under this weird name. None of that.
No, these were pretty civil names. Yeah.
But you didn't start playing in bands till 79, you said, or?
That's the first time I actually started playing professionally. Other than that, it was just basement bands.
Yeah.
With just some friends. And maybe once a week if we were lucky.
Got it.
So right away, I started, and it was Ricky Carr that got me in, because he was in the Thunderbirds too.
Oh.
And Ricky was playing with Billy Thunder in the Thunderbolts.
Got it.
And he kept on telling me to come on up there. I'm going to be leaving. He was going with another band that Bobby Casey was starting, and they were called Sarge.
Ah, yes. He mentioned that on his podcast.
So Ricky was leaving, and just by happenstance, I was coming home one day, and it was the very last night. Fact is, it was the very last break, and Ricky was up there. He's like, I can't believe you're here.
Where is this?
Jonathan's, the old Rack and Roll, or the Rack and Roll Lounge.
Ah, okay. Yeah, all right. Because I knew they used to play, I always see that picture of Linda Lee and them playing at Commodore Downs, right?
That was the one, right? Yeah, yeah.
That's not you in the picture, is it?
Oh, yeah, that's me in the picture.
Oh, that's you in the picture.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
That's when I had some hair, a little bit more hair.
No offense. Yeah, I didn't recognize you. Yeah,
I know, right.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So
that's when you played with them.
Yeah. I had a chance to. Well, what it was is that was Ricky's last night. They were going to be closed for 2 weeks because they served underage drinkers and they got caught.
Okay.
So they were going to be closed for 2 weeks. Well, anyway, I went up and I played a few songs. And Billy Thunder really liked it. It was just simple beats.
And tell people what Billy Thunder and the Thunderbolts was.
Billy Thunder actually performed down in Nashville years ago. He had one song that was a top 40 song on Nashville radio way back then. I can't think of the name of it right now, but Billy and then his wife Linda Lee was the bass player, and then Louis Nadeau was a guitar player, and then myself on the drums. It was the four of us.
And this is all country.
This is all country. And the three of them country. Sang really good.
Oh, okay.
But the thing was is they were closed for 2 weeks for serving underage drinkers. During those 2 weeks, I got hired, and we practiced. But the place was closed. So it reopened right after New Year's Eve.
Okay.
After New Year's Day or whatever. It reopened, and I started playing with them. And it wasn't until that August that I turned 21.
But,
so how ironic is that,
right?
Right.
So you were the house band at Jonathan's.
Yeah, and I'm going through the apprenticeship program at GE.
Okay, that's what I was
going to
say.
And I'm going to school 4 nights a week.
All right.
And I'm playing 4 nights a week. We're playing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, and Saturday afternoons.
Wow.
Chip, I had money galore. Honest to God, I would take the money on my wall and put it in my top dresser drawer right there, and wads of it. And if I wanted another drum set.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what Joe Salarino used to say, the same thing. He said, I was making more money than my dad back then.
Well, I never had a chance to spend anything.
Yeah, right.
because I was working all day, taking evening classes earlier in the evening, and then going and turning around and playing.
Gotcha.
So I had classes till 9 o'clock, and I started playing at 10.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Where were the classes at GE?
At Iroquois High School.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, evening
so,
classes.
Either way, that's a haul to Jonathan's on the west side from Iroquois.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think... There was other classes. I think we were over at maybe 7 or 7.30 or
okay,
so, but
gotcha.
Still.
Still,
you know, right,
yeah.
At least I had a bathroom break.
I was going to say, yeah, that'd be about it. Wow, and those were, what time? 9 to 1 or?
9.30 to 1.30.
Okay.
Was our regular gig, 9.30 to 1.30.
All right.
Yeah, and then Saturday afternoons, which they had happy hour prices. Well, I hated going there to Saturday afternoons because that was my chance to sleep in or do whatever.
Yeah, right.
Was 2 to 5.
And how was the crowd during that? Do you remember?
They had,
I mean.
Oh, I do remember some of the people in the crowd.
Yeah. Because I wonder, like, what's
the crowd these were,
like on a Saturday, well, 2 to 5?
There were some drinkers, let's put
it
that way.
Got it. Okay. All right.
Saturday afternoon or two.
Right? Jonathan's was a different place back then. Got it.
Well, and then, too, some of the bands that weren't playing, obviously, on Saturday afternoons, they'd come in. And get up on the stage and do a few songs.
So oh, okay.
That's how I got to know, you know, a couple of the other players, you know, Bob Casey and Denny Casey. And
was it just a country bar? Music bar?
It was.
Okay.
That was it.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And so, you know, I always ask, I haven't had a lot of country guys on. Ricky Carr, obviously, was one of them. You know, I mean, was country music something that you liked listening to?
Not really.
That's what I wondered, yeah. And I hear that a lot, but then I fell into it. And because, I mean, you go on to play with the Rudler Brothers for 40 years or something, you know. And
well, yeah, if you look at my record collection, you wonder, you know. You'll see a Waylon Jennings and then maybe something like...
yeah, you and I have talked about music.
Frank Zappa.
Yeah,
you know?
Like you have a big, diverse collection at your house. And
yeah, if it hits me, it hits me. If it's good music, it's good music. And, you know, I've learned to like country. One thing about country and playing and starting when I did is you learned how important the fundamentals are. You have to stick with those.
Right.
Before you can do anything else. If you don't understand the fundamentals and the patterns and, you know, you know what I mean about patterns,
yeah,
right? There's
patterns.
Certain things. Some players can be really good players, but they're just not compatible playing with somebody. They just
what don't do you
hit
mean
the
by fundamentals?
Well, I'm just saying that I couldn't stray away. I had to stay with solid, just straight.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. I thought you
country.
Meant like also. There's also the fundamentals of being in a band. You
right.
know, getting along with people. You know, understanding, feeling where they're going to go, and this. You know,
and I had to learn that too. Exactly.
Sure, right.
Yep,
right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what type of country music are we talking about?
Oh,
in 79.
Oh my gosh! Back then,
it would be what we call old country now, or
it was old country.
Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash.
Oh, we did a lot of Johnny Cash stuff. Not too much Waylon Jennings, but you know. A few of the Johnny Cash, just Charlie Pride.
Sure, yeah.
Just some of the classic
old
country players. I can't even think of who they are
Hank
right now.
Hank Snow.
Oh, yeah. Now.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Some of those guys played at the Erie County Fieldhouse. Charlie Pride was the first one.
I know, I see that. Right. Well, of course, we got your book.
Yeah, right, yeah. So that's what I always wonder, too. Like, you know, when we talk about 79... bars, we mentioned Jonathan's, you're a house band there playing 3 days a week, 4 days a week, whatever. What were the other country bars back then? Because there were a few, right?
Farmer's Tavern on Route 98.
No longer there.
No longer right. there. That burned down.
Right.
Actually, too, one that did play a lot of country. It was on the other side of 90.
Yeah, that's...
Travelers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That was Peach Street. One. Yeah, 90. Yeah. Yeah, right around there. Wasn't there one?
Remember Contiki Gardens?
I do. Where was that?
That was on West 38th Street, just past McClellan. There's the breakfast places in there.
Would that be
that same area?
East 38th
or
Street.
East 38th.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, past McClellan. Yeah.
Okay.
They had country bands there, too.
Oh, wow.
I know. It was kind of a different... gig.
I never would have thought a place called the Contiki had, you know, country bands. But What was the place? Wasn't there one out off 99 sat way back in there?
The Valley Inn.
Valley Inn.
Yeah, I played there too.
Right, right.
Yep.
Because I feel like there were more back then.
There was
venues to play country music. Like it was, you know, nowadays there's not a lot of venues. There's plenty of venues, just not a lot that cater to country.
Yeah, there was one place, I was there one time, I believe, was the Allied Trading Club, and there was a guitar player named Smokey Kelly.
Okay.
And that would have been in 1979, sneaking up there, because I'm still not 21.
Yep, right, right.
But that's long gone.
Where was the Allied Trading Club?
It was right on the lake there, in Findlay Lake someplace.
Oh, in Findlay Lake, okay. Yeah. All right. Did you guys travel around?
Like Findlay Lake or Lake Pleasant? I'm trying to think.
Okay.
Lake Pleasant was, yeah. No, we didn't do too much traveling.
No? Okay. Oh.
So in 79, when I'm playing with Billy Thunder, my first set of drums was white with silver sparkle.
Okay.
A year or so later, when I took them out for the first time, they were yellow with gold sparkle.
From the smoke?
From the smoke.
Wow. Yeah.
And I couldn't get that out. And believe it or not, I'm redoing those drums right now.
I was going to say, do you still have them?
I still do.
That's cool. Yeah. Wow.
I'm not crazy like guitar players. I got 20, 30 guitars, you know. And, but that's, I think it's typical for a guitar player to have
a lot of guitars.
A few guitars.
You do have a drum table, though.
That little table do.
That you made out of a snare. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, yeah.
So
you're not a guy that collects a whole bunch of drums, which.
No, just the one set in my basement that I'm redoing now. And then my set of pearls.
Okay.
That I've been using for the last 20 years.
Right, right.
Yeah. And
so how long do you play with Billy?
About a year and a half.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, did you ever play with Bill Arnold or no?
Oh, yeah.
And what'd you play with him?
Well, believe it or not, Bill Arnold, a guy named Terry Graham, bass player.
Right.
And myself had a little three-piece thing going for just a little bit.
Okay.
The Barracks.
Oh, yeah.
Out in Girard.
Still there.
It didn't last too long. Bill and I just didn't see eye to eye for whatever reason back then. And so we parted ways. And then about 10 years later, he's playing guitar with a guy named Johnny Lambert in Full House Band.
Okay, yeah.
And they were out at, it was the Valley Inn, too.
Oh, okay.
And they needed a drummer. And so I went out there and played drums. And next thing you know, Bill and I are best friends again. Because he's fantastic on guitar,
say,
too. You know,
he's one of those guys, and he doesn't want to be on the podcast. I've offered it to him numerous times, and he's just, you know, humble, you know, but he's one of those guys that everybody says, oh, no, he's like one of the best guitarists that ever came out of Erie. You know, he was playing country predominantly, but he's incredible.
He could play different genres, that's for sure. Yeah,
still does, you know, down in Florida.
Oh, he's still playing.
Yeah.
And four-hour gigs, too. I mean, you know.
And he's older than you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bill's quit. Gosh, Bill was in the Vietnam War. So I got, you know. I know he was over in Vietnam in the early 70s.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah, he played with Rick Cass and Chuck Leone in Silverlight, in DERF, for quite a while. And reunited and everything. And
very talented.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I had that question to ask you because I saw a picture of you two together. I was thinking, you know, did you ever play with him? So, all right. So, Bill Thunder in the Thunderbolts, 79 for a year. Then you get out of school. First of all, we should say that Dale has brought a piece of wood with him. Okay. Some guys bring big, you know, notebooks full of things. Some guys bring little crib sheets. Dale brought a piece of wood that he's written all of his bands on, just a random piece of wood. And there's a lot of bands on there that I don't know, but I'm glad you brought it because you're going to tell me what comes after Billy Thunder.
Well, after Billy Thunder, believe it or not, it was a group called the Jim Turner Band.
Another country band, yeah.
Another country band, yeah. And Jim passed away a few years ago.
Right.
And we did a benefit for him and everything.
He was involved with a lot of those benefits that Ricky would put on at the...
he was always there. Jim was always one of the band. We did a lot of jamborees back then.
That's what they
country
were
jamborees were a big thing.
You did them at the Rainbow Gardens
We did the one every year for the Tri-State Country Music Bluegrass Association, and that was Ricky Carr's organization that he started.
Right.
And I remember they used to pack the place. And the proceeds went to different organizations. I think for the first couple of years, they went to the Children's Miracle Network.
I think you're right, yeah.
So there was a lot of money, $6,000, $8,000 right. they would generate way back then.
Back then.
Yeah.
And the Jim Turner Band, what was the composition of that? I mean, five guys, four guys, what was it made up of?
Well, it changed a little bit. The one guitar player was, his name was Gary Wilson. There was a Mark Dobson. Mark was a super player. Dave Zukowski was the bass player.
Okay, all right.
And we played pretty much at the Hotel Evergreens.
Oh, out in Edinburgh.
Out in Edinburgh.
Another place that burned down. You've played at two places that burned down so far. Farmer's Tavern.
I'll shut up.
Yeah. A lot of people played at Evergreen. You know, it was a popular place.
It was.
They had everything from punk to country to hard rock.
Well, because you had the college students there,
Absolutely.
Too. You know, and
right.
it was the only place around there that had big music.
Yeah. So, Bill Turner Band, how long did that stick around?
Oh, the Jim Turner Band?
Oh, Jim Turner, sorry.
Well, I stayed with Jim Bright for a couple of years.
Okay.
But Jim always had good musicians with him over the years. Jim played for 20, 30 years as the Jim Turner Band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always country.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And so during those years, you've obviously graduated from what?
Gannon? Or what do you mean graduate?
Did you go to Gannon? And I'm thinking about those classes that you took for GE.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I finished my apprenticeship program.
Your apprenticeship. Yeah, yes. right. So you're working at GE now at that point.
I was working at GE then. And believe it or not, I stayed there only another year. I started in 77 at GE.
Oh, okay.
And in 82, I took a leave of absence.
Okay.
For 3 years, they gave me a leave.
Wow.
To get my degree at Gannon. I was signed up for my degree in industrial management.
Wow.
But I had the summer off. So the summer of 82, I'm playing down in Panama City Beach, Florida.
With who?
It's this group called the Cook and Cash Review. It was Eddie Cash and Ronnie Cook, and they were both guitar players. And then Rick Lance was a bass player with Matt Earl James. And, we spent the whole summer down there. We played six nights a week.
How did you end up down there? Did you know them or something? I mean,
Ronnie Cook, the one guitar player, had a connection somehow with somebody up in Erie.
Okay, yeah.
And so I never even met him until I got down there with my drums, you know. Drove all the way down there, and next thing you know, we're playing six nights a week.
And you're playing country?
We're playing country.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fact is, we even had one evening where, who the heck was it? The gambler. Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers, sure.
Came in, sat down, and says, "You guys know a Kenny Rogers song?" And we only knew one. We did it, and he left.
He came up and played, sang on it? Or?
Oh, no.
Oh, he was just sitting in the audience. Do?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So he had one drink real quick, and then he left.
All right. So I'm guessing wife Jane is not in the picture in 82 back then.
No.
Okay, so you're footloose and fancy free, hanging out in 1982 in Panama City, playing a gig every night. I mean, that had to be pretty cool.
Oh, yes. It was almost too easy to get into trouble.
I bet it was.
I'll stop there. My life right. knows.
I bet it was, yeah. So you come back in 82, and you've got your degree, or?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're just on
Yeah, I'm just vacation. Starting right there, yeah.
Yeah, right.
No, I didn't get my degree until 85.
Okay.
And then I went back to General Electric, but believe it or not, they weren't hiring. So I just started working elsewhere.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Were you playing gigs?
Oh, yeah. I was always playing.
Who then?
Well, probably then I was with Terry English and Nighthawk.
Right.
We played a lot together.
And Nighthawk, I have a few different versions of them. Terry English, Bob Casey, Mark Jeunesse played, Dave Cathy?
Yeah, Dave Cathy played.
And and then eventually in 90, it's just Terry, Jesse, James, Davis, and you. Is that right?
It ended up three-piece, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
So
we were playing at Cheers for Tommy Carr.
That's what I have here, 22nd and Wayne. Yeah,
yep.
I played there too, one of my first gigs. Yeah, one of the worst gigs I've ever played, yeah. right around that same time, actually, yeah. But where does – you played with Southwind before that, though, right? Didn't you? With Murray
Miller? Yeah, well, actually, in I started with Tulsa. It was probably about 83. Okay. And so for 83 and 84, Tulsa, we were the house band at the Best Western.
And Tulsa is?
Five nights a week. Ronnie Ruder, Bobby Ruder,
Terry Graham.
Donnie Davis.
Right.
And myself. And then we also had a fiddle player, too, Johnny Cochran.
Okay,
and
right.
He was from West Virginia.
That's right. I remember Ronnie telling me about him. He was great. Yeah. Yeah, so you start playing with them on a regular basis, right?
Yeah, what it was is we were actually the Bob Casey band. We were playing at Travelers, and we all just left Bob. We said, we're not going to fire you. We're just going to leave you. And so we left, and that's when we started Tulsa. Oh. And we were up there at Travelers, and it was Jim Hobbs was one of the owners, and he says, if you guys want a job here, he says, I like the name Tulsa. Maybe you'll like that, too.
Wow.
And that's how we got it.
And that's how it stuck.
Yeah. 20-second conversation.
Perfect.
You want to play there?
Yeah. And so was there any bad blood between you guys and Bob Casey?
No, not really. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
And so then he goes on to form Casey versus Casey later with his brother? Or?
Ah. That was before that, I believe.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I always think of him in that arena because people talked about how they fought.
It was when I was playing with Jim Turner that Casey versus Casey formed, and they wanted me to be the drummer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I kind of agreed to it, and Jim got all bent out of shape. I mean, he was, you know. And so I said, okay, Jim, I'll stay with you.
Gotcha. So, okay, all right. So was Nighthawk, how was Nighthawk different than Tulsa, and why did you, what were you playing at the same time, Tulsa and Nighthawk? Or?
No, it was Tulsa. Okay. First, and then Terry English was also the best man in our wedding. He would come up there, and he lived just on the other side of 90. I mean, directly on the other side of 90. There was a little small trailer right there, so he was living there.
Okay.
And he'd come up, and he'd, you know, sing a little bit and stuff. And so I got to know him just from
him
sitting in. And a few times afterwards, I'd stop over there, and we'd party a little bit, whatever. Yeah. And he started playing guitar, and I'm like, you know what? I like his style. And so it wasn't too long after that we started playing together.
Was he in a band before that, or was it?
Well, yeah. I mean, Terry actually put an album out.
Oh, wow.
In Naples, Florida. Terry English and Night Shift, it's called.
Okay.
And they have a song that still plays on the radio down there, jukebox, whatever, it's called Naples Bay.
That's crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
And he's from here?
Originally, I think he was from Ohio area, around Dayton.
Okay.
I don't.
All right. Ohio,
he got here because of some girl.
Oh, that happened. I got it. All right. So, but Nighthawk is country too. Everything you've played in.
We did a lot of Bob Seger. A lot of Bob Seger. That was the primary sound.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't really so much hardcore country.
Yeah. No. Right. So was that the first time you were kind of expanding into album rock or any type of rock, or was that the only time?
Well, it was one of the times. I mean, you know, because I've been fortunate to play with so many different groups.
Right.
That had different styles, and some of them, I've never done these Seger songs, or I've never done these other types of songs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it allowed me to branch out a little bit.
Because Tulsa, you guys were doing some top 40 type of stuff,
too. We were doing a lot of top 40 country stuff.
Yeah, big
time stuff. Alabama was big.
Right. Even Eagles and
oh, yeah, we did a lot of Eagles.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But Nighthawk was the same thing, the same type of.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
All right.
We did Eagles and stuff with them, too.
Mm-hmm. And that lasts a couple years, at least 3 years.
Yes.
Yeah. What's next on your board?
Well, it is on my board here right now.
Dry Country? What was Dry Country?
Dry County, I think it was called.
Dry County?
Okay. That was at Cheers. And that was toward the end of Nighthawk, too, it was. And so it was Terry English from Nighthawk, right. Bob Casey, and then Terry Smith. And the three of them were reformed alcoholics. So they weren't drinking. So that's why it's called Dry County.
Ah, got it.
Okay. But the drummer was drinking.
That's right.
So, but we only played about 5-6 months with that.
I wondered, yeah. I saw a few ads.
Yeah, it was a short thing. Yeah.
And so that was 87. So you're bouncing around. You're playing with different guys here and there. You're continuing to play. In fact, doesn't sound like you ever stopped. When do you stop and have, when do you get married? When do you have kids?
I didn't.
No?
I just kept on playing.
Okay.
Yeah. I pretty much didn't stop too much.
Cool.
If I did any stopping, it was just the last 4 or 5 years, just not playing out in any bands much anymore. And then I got, bought one of those cajones, and that was it.
You're back at it.
Well, and so I'm fortunate that there's about 6 different acts that allow me to just to walk up on the stage and plug in and start playing.
And nowadays, there's plenty of acoustic acts out there that could use some percussion, and it's nice to add it.
Yeah. Oh, and you guys were one of them, too. Yeah, I see you're... Right. Glenn's coming back here, too.
Yeah. And then you and I got to play with Mike and Marie.
Right.
So you got to open up, bring the whole set there. That wasn't just, I mean, when does the whole set come out that often?
Not too many times.
I was going to say.
And especially, that was Arendelle.
Yeah.
And there wasn't that much room.
Right.
Yeah. And I get claustrophobic as it is. Of course, drummers were always in the back.
Yeah, you and I were tight there, and we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. I couldn't get comfortable. I really couldn't.
Yeah. Oh, it went fine. I thought it was fun, but I always tell people about that. You know, when you play for Mike and Marie, he just controls the iPad, and the songs pop up, and you got to be ready to go. And I'd look at you sometimes like, do you know this song? And at least you knew them. Yeah.
Well, at least we heard them, right? Yeah, right. That's the big, because Mike's, you know, honestly, his repertoire is over 2,000.
Yeah, I just saw them this weekend. They're fantastic. I
mean, yeah.
They played everything from Stacy's Mom to, you know, an old country song.
They
to,
played our wedding.
Did they really?
Reception. Yes, they did. Yep. And Ricky Carr was the drummer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Wow. All right. So, yeah, were there other drummers in town that you admired that you liked to see?
Oh, Joe Salarino. Yeah. Joe was a very hot drummer then. You know?
Was he playing with the Cows then?
No, he was playing with some girl named Maggie.
Maggie Flanagan.
Okay.
Yeah, great singer.
Yes, she was. Yeah. And then Joe was doing some singing and stuff, too.
Right.
And, of course, he later got with Dickie Buckle.
Right.
And stuff. But then again, see, I didn't go out too much to see bands because...
That's what I wondered.
I was playing.
Right.
So...
Yeah, you know, people or guys always talk to me about, I met other musicians at... after 2 a.m, and we would go to Pano's or we would go to Dominic's or whatever, you know, because everybody would go there. And that's where I got to meet other musicians, but I could never go hear them because we were playing.
That's the way it was.
Yeah, 4 days a week.
Well, like people would talk about, you know, well, did you ever see this episode of Saturday Night Live? I never saw Saturday Night Live.
That's right. Yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah,
always played.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So what are we missing? What did we miss so far? What's the board say?
Oh, the board says all kind of different things here. The Brian Burton Band was a big one that I played with.
Now, chronologically, when does Brian come into play? Because you played in Appomattox and Full House, right? And
Brian came in about 25 years ago. So around 2000.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, around 2000.
So I always say the podcast goes to 1990, but I have people in here like you that have continued to play on, and, you know, you continued to play through the 90s. So before Brian, were there other ones?
Not really. I don't think so.
No.
I did have a stint for a while, believe it or not, but it was part of the Matt Earl James Band.
Matt Earl James.
And that kind of fizzled out, and we ended up playing with Vinnie Younger.
Wow.
In one of the last things he put together, and I remember it was at the Upman Corps.
Okay.
And Dave Cathy was playing the sax and the flute and everything. Of course, Dave passed away quite a few years ago.
Okay.
But he was with the Younger Brothers and stuff, too, I believe. But Vinnie Younger, who was a fantastic singer.
Sure, right.
I mean, he really was.
Yeah. Part of the Epics, one of the best singers.
Yeah.
And Paul Yocklin were the men...
Was Rick Lanza was playing bass. I want to say we had a fiddle player.
Okay.
But she wasn't doing much fiddling. I don't know exactly. But it was part of this Matt Earl James Band that was kind of breaking up. And Vinny needed some backup. So we started playing at the Upman Corps. I remember it was the first weekend was 12 to 4. And then it went from 1 to 5, and then we ended up going from 2 o'clock, playing from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the morning.
What the hell?
I know. 2 to 6 o'clock in the morning at the Upman Corps.
Who was going there? Were there people there?
It was packed.
Jeez.
For I
All right, tell me where the Upman Core is. I've heard of it. Is it on 26th Street?
Was it 25th in Peach?
Okay.
Or 24th in Peach? Somewhere's 25th in Peach right there.
All right. Private club, obviously, you know. Cause
yeah, a big, huge place there. The building's still there.
right.
You know? And I remember, because there's a church another block down on Sass, one time leaving, and it was like 6:30 in the morning, and his family was going to church.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
I'm like, Dale, this is weird. You know, you shouldn't be doing this anymore.
Well, if you're playing with Vinnie Younger, I never think of him as a country singer.
We didn't do any country.
Okay, yeah. So it was all old standard stuff.
It was. Or, it was all his, yep.
Yeah.
Bo Diddley things and stuff.
Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That must have been exciting to play with him.
Yeah, but not that late. It wasn't
fun. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you had a regular job at the time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, so what happens when you start playing normal song? Was it the Brian Burton Band that kind of got back into regular gigs?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Brian, I always think of him as blues.
Well, we did a lot of blues
style.
You know, he liked Joe Satriani and who's the big blues guitarist with a hat? You know,
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Stevie Ray Vaughan. Right. You know, so we did a lot of those classics and stuff.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because Brian's a heck of a guitar player. And
who else wasn't too bad.
Who else was in that band?
Keith Mazanowski was the bass player.
Right, right. Passed away a few years ago, right?
Yeah. Bob Omer was the keyboard player.
Okay.
Bob passed away.
Yeah, I don't know, Bob.
A few years back, 4 or 5 years ago.
Did you play in another band with Bob or no? I've heard that name before. He probably played around.
Yeah, he did. He played with quite a few bands over the years and
okay.
stuff.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Actually, one of the last bands he played with was with TaylorMade.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Okay.
Yeah.
The early days.
That wasn't.
Yeah,
it was early days.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
he got sick, and then that was it. And
got it.
Passed away.
Okay. So, Jeff, what was Brian Burton Band? 4 or 5 piece?
4 piece, sometimes 3 piece.
Oh, okay.
We were probably the best at 3 piece, believe it or not. It was Mike Bruno, who lives down around Clarksville, Nashville area.
Okay.
Plays with a band called Driving Savannah.
Hmm.
And Mike was the bass player, and me on the drums, and Brian on guitars. And in the studio, we'd use Trevor for some of the
Trevor
keyboards
Easter,
and the backup
right.
stuff.
So the 2 albums he recorded that you told me about, were you on both of those?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I wasn't the exclusive drummer, because back then I was playing maybe with a couple different bands.
Okay.
Alan Chafee, right?
Yep.
Al Chafee's playing drums on a couple of the songs,
okay,
too.
Okay, all right.
But majority of them, yeah, it was me.
Well, I mentioned earlier the Rudler Brothers and Tulsa and how you've been with them all those years. So they would come and stop and start? Is that how it worked?
Well,
over the years?
You never really leave those guys.
Yeah, right.
I'll still play a few jobs this year with the Rudler Brothers.
Right, right, yeah.
And it's up to Ronnie
when
he wants to go ahead and do the gigs, or his brother, too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're the staple. I mean, that was when we were like the band players band when we were Tulsa out
right.
there.
Right.
Yeah.
You played out at
The Best Western.
Best Western.
You know, that
right.
was it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, like, I had him as a teacher, obviously, at McDowell, and I never knew he was like rolling in, with a few hours of sleep having played,
I remember
3
going
in
into McDowell. This was before any security. Going into McDowell with his pay for the week.
Yeah.
And knocking on his door right there, and some kid answering. Ronnie would show a lot of work because he taught history.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he'd show World War II movies.
Yeah.
And I remember whoever answered the door says, "Shh, Mr. Ruler's in the back sleeping."
He's a great guy. He's a great coach, man. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right.
That's funny. All right. So, Brian Burton Band, where are you playing at back? So this is early 2000.
Oh, gosh. The Beer Mug,
we
played down there, for Pauly. I'm trying to think, too. There's another place out on West 12th Street toward Powell Avenue.
The one right there at Powell and 12th?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bay City Hotel.
Yeah.
Bay County Hotel.
Bay County, okay.
Yeah,
I think it was
there.
A Danza bar before that or
it
something.
It was, yeah, right.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we played there.
In that back room?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild, yeah.
it was.
You got to, like, walk through the bar, and then there's a whole other room back here. Yeah, yep.
And, gosh.
No Sherlock's, no
No.
Did you ever play at the PI back in the day?
No.
No?
Maybe once. Maybe once with the Matt Earl James Band. Okay. That was it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, I like talking to guys like you and say, like, what's a bar that's not around anymore that you missed playing at? Are there any? I mean, the Beer Mug's not around anymore. We know that. Sherlock's is not around anymore. There are plenty of places to play, but two of yours burned down.
Yeah, I mean, Farmers. I played a lot at Farmers Tavern. That was a fun place. Ronnie
they have
Farmer.
A stage? Or?
Yeah, they did.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, that makes a difference, too. You know, people talk about playing at Norbs, you know, where it's a tiny little stage, or they play at Sherlock's, where it's a big stage, you know, or you play on the floor in a lot of places.
That's true.
Yeah. But so Brian Burton Band, what happens then? You play with them for a couple years?
Yeah. You know, still working, raising the family and stuff like that. And, you know, then, gosh, somehow I got back in the country a little bit. But then, well, maybe it was about 10 years or so ago, I got with my stepbrother-in-law, Todd Morton, and we had a group called the Blue Razz Trio. Hmm. And we played up at Wegmans.
Oh, yeah.
Every Friday night.
A grocery rock, yeah.
I think it was like 6 to 9 or so.
Yeah, and the little
When they had the cafe. Market cafe.
Yeah, right.
And that was fun.
Yep, I've done
that
those,
That was a good
too.
Time.
Yeah.
And Todd did a lot of different songs that we all know, but I've never played with in other bands.
Was it just a trio? Or?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
Todd pretty much did most of the
singing
and playing and stuff. Right. And then Mark Genest, bass player, would sing a few songs.
Right.
But, yeah, it was fun. Yeah. It was fun.
And then just what? Off and on throughout the years until you become the Cajon Man.
Yeah, I mean, gosh. Let's see, I played with Robin Bjork, Carl Nowazinski for a while. Robin and Carl, they were good.
Yeah. I'd like to have both of them on the podcast, actually.
Yeah.
All right.
A lot of little sit-in gigs and stuff like that. I used to fill in with, like, the Tombstone Band, and even back...
Oh, yeah.
If Casey versus Casey needed a drummer for a special show,
you could sit in.
Okay. I could just fill in because I knew the songs. Mike and Marie Miller.
That's right. Yep. Right. Yeah, you are one of those standby drummer guys. You can sit in and play with because you've been playing so long. You know, people look at you as, oh, we can get Dale and he'll just know half these songs. Like you and Joe Salarino are sort of that type of player.
Yeah, I guess we got that knack.
Yeah,
you know, that we can go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
No, we're not playing all the parts exactly right. Or even practicing them because it's a one-night gig. So, you do the best you can.
Yeah. So I always ask this at the end of podcasts, not always, but to guys like you, craziest gig ever, funniest thing that ever happened.
Huh.
Got to be something.
Well, gosh.
Get kicked out anywhere? Any cops come in?
Well, I think it was my first New Year's Eve, so it would have been the very next year. So this would have been 1980.
Because
it's true. My daughter was born in June of 80. Anyway, I had a date for New Year's Eve playing at Jonathan's with Billy Thunder.
Sure.
And it wasn't this other girl. And this other girl that I was having some, you know, dealings with, whatever.
Sure.
She came in that night, and of course, there was a big fight. And my date leaves. And turned out this was my daughter's mom, okay? She's swearing and cussing and everything like that, and they drag her out, or physically drag her out. And this is before the evening start, and I'm going, boy. So it was the worst New Year's Eve gig I ever did.
I bet. Yeah, you'll never forget that one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And do any gigs where you opened up for, like, a national act or anything in town, or any fairs or anything like that?
You know, we really didn't do too many of those. No.
Yeah. Right. Because I know those come up off and on, too.
I had a couple offers. I actually got a phone call one time from Johnny Paycheck after he got out of jail.
Oh, okay.
Because the governor, I guess in Ohio, Governor Celeste pardoned him for some manslaughter charge or something. So he calls me up and he wants me to go on the road with him.
How does he even know you?
His bass player I did a few jobs with.
Down in Florida.
Of course, they lived in Ohio area and stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, I told them, take this job and shove it. No, I said very sincerely, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Because he didn't give me too much notice. I would have had to go on the road like within, you know, 3 or 4 days with him.
Yeah.
He was ready to go.
And you had a family at this point. And
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't think we could end on anything better than take this job and shove it.
I mean,
that's a great, one. All right. Well, good. I appreciate you coming in. You've come a long way from your Bachelor of Survival class. It's great seeing you still out playing. Go see Dale playing with Acoustic Jukebox. You're still going to be playing throughout the summer with them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Very cool. And anything else we missed?
Well, try to look for my driveway jams, too, because...
Oh, that's right.
Those are our throw-together gigs and stuff.
Those are super cool. Yeah.
And you and Glenn would be great for one, too.
I'd love to do that. Yeah, okay. Last year we...
All right, you heard it, folks.
We were
He's
playing.
Committed now, so...
Yeah, and the driveway jam is exactly that. Like, he has a gig in his driveway, and neighbors and everyone's invited, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
The whole neighborhood comes out there, brings their lawn chairs, and...
Now, I always thought they were once a year, but it seems like you do them
I do
more
three
than...
of them,
oh,
usually.
Okay.
One June, July, and August, usually.
Oh, very cool. All right. Mm-hmm. We'll have to check that out. And watch for Facebook, because Dale's all over Facebook, and he promotes when these things are, right?
Yes.
All right. Good deal, man. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Erie Music History Podcast. I want to say thanks to the JPT Foundation. They have been a financial supporter of the podcast since the beginning, and they also will give us a free space to have our monthly music night on the first Tuesday of the month. It always features our great house band, the Fabulous Leftovers, as well as a lot of other local bands and musicians. But it's a lot of fun. First Tuesday of the month, totally free. Any donations go to the Second Harvest Food Bank. It is BYOB. There's a great pizza shop next door, Pasalinquas. Check that out, the first Tuesday of the month. Also, make sure that you check out Jack Stevenson's Two Man Happy Hour podcast. Basically tells you where people are playing today, where and when, and you can check that out at the number2manhappyhour.com. All right, that's all I got for you. Thanks again for listening.